Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Episode 1 of this year's Good Food Podcast. Once a year, we turn our attention to the buttery, flaky, all-American pastry in a bonus podcast all about pie. Our 7th annual Good Food Pie Contest is on the horizon, and the deadline to enter your pie is coming up fast. So don't be flaky. Leave that to the crust. Be sure to enter before 11:55 p.m. on Sunday, September 27th. Just go to kcrw.com/pie to find all the details. Meanwhile, we're here to stoke your enthusiasm with a few stories about my favorite dessert. You know that expression, as American as apple pie? Well, when you break it down to the core ingredients, apple pie turns out to be like many of us, from all over. In her book, The American Plate, historian Libby O'Connell investigates our culinary heritage. And yes, pie is indeed on the plate. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Evan.
One of the things that's always fascinated me when I read old cookbooks is this reference to using a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And until you really think about it, your mind goes, what do you mean, a coffin?
Mm-hmm.
So what did they mean by the pie coffin?
So they don't mean an elongated box to hold a corpse. They mean a box to hold food. Coffin just means a box. All right.
So crust at that time was made to not necessarily be edible.
Well, when I wrote the book, I believed, and this had been what I had read and in other sources, but also what I'd experienced when I was working as a interpreter at Plymouth Plantation on Cape Cod, that if you just are mixing flour, not pastry flour, you know, it was more like a whole grain, whole wheat flour, with some shortening lard and a little bit of water, but you didn't do it with much care, you end up with something that's quite like tough cardboard. But that would be a very good case to bake, you know, savory dishes and fruit pies as well. And the intent was to create a case that you would seal, and it would sort of bake and steam the food all together, and you'd be making it in a pie. I found out this past summer, a year ago, I visited Hampton Court. Now, this is after the book was published. I visited Hampton Court, and there they make pie according to a recipe from the court of Henry VIII. And they're finding that the chefs at Henry VIII's court in Hampton Court put ginger and saffron and nutmeg and all these valuable spices into the crust. And they said, you know what? Nobody is going to flavor a crust that they plan just to throw out. They are only going to use these expensive spices if the crust is something that people really enjoy, particularly if it's seasoned that way. So you have two theories on how people made coffins, and it may be just about how wealthy your larder was and what type of ingredients you could include. But my feeling is this. It was all of the pie was eaten, but maybe not by the same person. So you got a piece of pie. You might eat the filling, but the crust might be returned to the kitchen and the servants got it.
Do you know when crust moved from that sort of paradigm to become something that was absolutely meant to be eaten and was more
and
flaky.
Proud of. Yeah, I mean, people, you know, that whole can she bake a cherry pie? You know, Billy Boy, Billy Boy. It's a great way of understanding how valuable pie baking skills were when you were on the marriage market in the 19th century. I see this change in the by the 1700s. So pretty early in the story of America, before the Revolution, people were interested in making a nice flaky crust that complemented whatever the contents were, whether it was fish or apple.
So let's talk about that American pie, apple pie, which turns out to be, like many of us,
all over. Yeah. This is really one of my favorite stories in the history of food because I think it really makes people take a step back and think a little bit more carefully about how they express themselves. When we say, as American, as apple pie, exactly what are we saying? Because not one ingredient is from the continental United States, right?
So to me, I think that's perfect.
I do too. It's like an even better metaphor than a melting pot. Wouldn't you rather be America, the land of the pie, instead of America, the land of the melting pot? We're all together in this pie. You know, we're from all over the world.
Yeah, this great whole that is made of all these separate parts from all over the world.
Well, people forget that cows and pigs are not indigenous to North America. They're all brought over by the Spanish. So lard and butter do not exist here before the arrival of the Spanish. It's about 1493 is actually when they're introduced. So we know exactly when they come into this hemisphere, and you need one of those two ingredients to make most types of pie crusts. Wheat is introduced as well. That originates in Turkey. Apples are from also near Turkey as well, but they're really cultivated in northern France and in Britain and brought over by those colonists. The sugar comes from a long way away, traveling across Asia, and then ends up in the Caribbean. And then the spices, of course, even allspice, if you put allspice in your apple pie, that originates in Jamaica, not in the continental United States. So all of the ingredients come from different countries, and you put it together and you get one of the most delicious pies you can ever taste.
Libby O'Connell's the chief historian for the History Channel. Her new book is The American Plate, A Culinary History in 100 Bites. We have a ton of apple recipes on the Good Food blog. Classic apple pie, gluten-free apple pie, deep dish apple pie, cider roasted apple pie. We've even got a grapple pie recipe from one of our judges, Roxana Julepot. She combines both apples and grapes in her pie, both of which happen to be in season right now at the farmer's market. And if you feel like your pie needs some fine-tuning or you just need some confidence building, join me and Clemence Gossett at the Gourmandy School of Sweets and Savories this Sunday, September 13th, for a pie clinic. You can bring your pies to be critiqued. Plus, we'll be demoing pie crusts two different ways, and we'll be telling you how to nail your fruit filling. Clemence and I will be at your service to answer whatever questions you have and to just offer some advice. We've got a link to the event on my Facebook page. Search for me, Evan Kleiman, and click like. I had my first Aussie meat pie at the Source while watching a footy match. It's kind of akin to having a Dodger dog at a baseball game for the first time, a truly cultural experience. The cravings for more started immediately thereafter. I mean, where can you find the iconic floater in L.A.? Nick Bishop obviously wanted to answer that question when he and his friend Joe Yukon opened Aussie Pie Kitchen right here in Santa Monica. Hi there.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. So I guess it's not surprising that Australia would have a big pie tradition, given that you were a colonial country. So pies must have come over with those very first immigrants.
That's correct. So we've been eating pies all of our lives. And mostly, as you said, we eat them at the footy. And let's be honest, they're not that great.
I have to tell you, I was kind of dreading eating it because I thought, okay, it's a meat pie.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, at a football stadium.
Yeah.
And who knows who's made it.
Yeah.
And it's been reheated.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Well, I'm glad you loved it. But a bit, just like the hot dog, as you said, just like a Dodger dog, let's face it, it's familiar, it's food, it's filling, but it's not that great. It's full of mystery meat. The nickname in Australia often for a pie is a rat's coffin. Now, whether that's true or not, of course it's not, but it's not good. Let's face it.
A rat's coffin?
A rat's coffin.
So in Australia, is the meat pie the default pie rather than a sweet pie?
Oh, absolutely. We eat very little sweet pie and we eat a lot of meat pies. And we don't call it a meat pie. We just call it a pie. Okay. And we don't call it an Aussie pie. It's a pie.
It's a pie. And what does the iconic pie look like?
Yeah, it's usually square, occasionally round. It's probably around 4 to 4.5 inches across. It's got a pastry top and a pastry bottom like a pot pie. And the inside there is a lot of brown, gooey, gravy-filled, let's use meat in inverted commas, okay? And then what happens is I hold that pie in my hand and I grab a sauce bottle, which is a ketchup bottle with a rubber neck, and then I squirt ketchup on the top or inside that pie. I hold it in my hand and I scoff it down.
So is it freestanding or is it in an aluminum tin?
It's generally freestanding.
So the crust has to be strong enough
Correct.
To hold its own weight?
Correct.
Does that mean it's not flaky?
It's not very flaky. It's more, rubbery is a bad word, but it is strong enough to hold the liquid, quite wet contents.
And what times of day are people normally doing this?
Well, if they're at the football, it's when the football's on, which is sort of during the lunchtime / afternoon. It's a real working man's food. And so a working man, a construction worker will have smoko, right? Their smoking break at 10 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, and they'll often have a pie for their morning tea or a smoko break. So really it's during the day. It's certainly not a breakfast treat. And it's not a dinner thing. It's an afternoon / lunchtime and break food.
Are there a lot of Aussies here in Southern California?
Yeah, 50,000 is the best estimate of Aussies that are living here in Southern California.
So you saw an opportunity.
Absolutely. And the opportunity was about bringing a different food, an interesting different food, and doing it very well. As opposed to an opportunity to say, let's teach America how to eat an Aussie pie. I'm really not interested in that. I'm interested in producing absolutely magnificent food. So when you walk into our restaurant, the first question you get asked is, have you ever had an Aussie pie before? And there's only three answers, okay? Answer number one is, yeah, mate, I'm Australian. Answer number two is, yes, I've been here before. And answer number three is, no, I haven't. Okay. So if your response is, yeah, mate, I'm Australian, or I'm English, or I'm South African, or I'm Canadian, and they're the people who've mostly eaten pies before, first thing I'll tell them is it takes 3 days to make our pie. We marinate our filling for 24 to 28 hours. On day two, we slow cook it for 2 to 4 hours, then we let it rest overnight. And then on day three, we finish the pie, we blind bake the pastry shell, we add a croissant top, we put the filling in there, and you can't hold our pie in your hand because it will crumble. Okay, so we are not a handheld pie. The next thing I tell them, which shocks them, is that less than 1% of people eat our pies with sauce, in brackets, ketchup. And they're like, what? That's like a hot dog without mustard. That's like a hot dog without ketchup. This is nuts. And then I tell them that 95.16% of our customers stack our pies with sides.
Okay, stacking. Now, when I hear a stacked pie, in the whole American sweet pie world, there's this, I guess it's a very traditional American custom, given that I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I can't adhere to that background. But people apparently stack, like, you know, you'll have an apple pie, then topped with a cherry pie, topped with maybe a lemon chess pie, and then you're basically eating this strange, huge thing.
So that's not what we do, okay? And what we do is we're stacking our pie on top of magnificent sides. So our sides are roasted Yukon Gold garlic mashed potatoes. We also stack with minty mushy peas, our peas with fresh mint, with shallots, with butter, with salt and pepper.
Okay, let me interrupt you now.
Okay.
Because I hear peas and pie, and then I go back to that original experience I had, which is a floater.
So our minty mushy peas are different than the pea soup, which we do in the floater.
Okay, so let's go back to the floater.
Okay.
Because this to me is something so odd. I mean, the idea of taking, it must have been originally tin peas.
Yes.
Something that most of us think of as being just the epitome of an appetizing.
Yeah.
And then sticking a pie on top of it is just so odd.
Yeah. So the pie floater is an Adelaide thing as opposed to an Australian thing, okay? And the pie floater, when I was a teenager, was something that we used to consume out of a thing called the pie cart. And the pie cart was a mobile caravan that was located in a number of locations. There were three of them in three different locations. So there was always one outside the Norwood Town Hall. There was one outside the Adelaide Railway Station. And then there was another one in the center of King William Street, right in the center of the square. And we used to go and have a pie floater after a big night of drinking because it's a proven hangover cure. What it was, you're absolutely right. There was a meat pie upside down in a bowl of pea soup with a dash of vinegar and a ton of ketchup sauce. When I used to eat those in Adelaide, I can tell you that the pea soup was disgusting and the pie was worse, okay? But we were drunk, so we didn't care. And we would go and have them, and it was a regular part of our routine. So in 1870... according to Wikipedia, which must be true, right? In 1870, a drunk guy went into a cafe in Adelaide and he ordered a meat pie and a bowl of pea soup. And we don't know how the pie ended up in the pea soup, but it did. He carefully placed it there. He dropped it in. He threw it. We don't know, but it ended up in the bowl of pea soup. He reached and he grabbed the ketchup and the vinegar that was close to him. He put it into this concoction in front of him, and he ate it. And as a professional drunk who was used to waking up feeling really terrible, the next day he woke up and he felt fantastic. So the pie floater was born, and that's it.
Nick Bishop is the owner of Aussie Pie Kitchen on Main Street in Santa Monica. All you late-night revelers will be happy to learn that it's open until 2:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights. So you can test the floater yourself and let us know. Does it really work as a hangover cure? Send me a tweet or leave me a comment on my Facebook page. Just search for me, Evan Kleiman. You know that savory categories are always a huge hit with the judges at the pie contest. I can think of three savory pies that won best in show over the years. But there are a total of seven categories for you to choose from, including fruit, nut, cream, cooked custard, vegan, and world pie, which is inspired by the Fowler Museum's art collection. The rule is, you can only enter one pie per category, but you can enter as many categories as you like. The rules are all spelled out at kcrw.com/pie. If you're pie obsessed, you've heard of Pie Town, a somewhat isolated community off Highway 60 in western New Mexico. This tiny town has two cafes with pie in their names and a history connected to the New Deal Farm Security Administration. Photographer-producer Arthur Drucker found Pie Town in a file cabinet of old archived photos. He fell hard. Hi, Arthur.
How are you, Evan?
I'm so fascinated by how you became introduced to Pie Town, because obviously for those of us that are just pie obsessed, it's pretty easy to learn about Pie Town because if you Google the word pie, eventually you get to Pie Town. But how did you come upon Pie Town?
I came upon Pie Town as a result of working on the movie Seabiscuit. If listeners have seen the movie, they'll recall that there were these black and white documentary type sections within the movie. And I was one of the co-producers of those segments. And in the course of doing my photo research for those segments, I came across not only FSA photographs, which I had already been familiar with, but I also came across Russell Lee's color photographs of Pie Town. Now, Russell Lee was one of the photographers working for the FSA, the Farm Security Administration. And he visited Pie Town in 1940. And he made photographs for the FSA, which were mostly in black and white. But he had some color film with him, and color film in 1940 was, professional color film was only about 3 years old. So what really struck me were these color photographs of homesteaders in Pie Town living like 19th century pioneers, living in cabins that they built with no electricity or running water. And there was some sort of, for lack of a better phrase, visual dissonance about that really stayed with me. And because I had already been interested in FSA photography, I had sworn to myself prior to that that one day I wanted to visit a place that an FSA photographer had been to and see what it was like now. So because I was so enamored with Russell Lee's photographs, especially his color photographs of Pinetown, that was the place, and that's what got me to Pinetown.
Remind us of what the FSA was and why they were sending photographers out.
The FSA, again, is the Farm Security Administration, and that was part of FDR's New Deal program. The FSA was formed initially to help poor farmers, but it sort of took on additional responsibilities, one of which was this photography unit that was formed by a gentleman named Roy Stryker. And Roy Stryker formed a photography unit that included well-known photographers like Dorothea Lange and Walker Evans, and they fanned out across the country. And quite honestly, part of their mission was a bit propagandistic because they wanted to document conditions to help FDR get his New Deal programs through Congress. But in addition to that, and I think the reason why the FSA photographs resonate so deeply now is they've become iconic images of what America was like during the Great Depression. And I think when a lot of people visualize the Great Depression, what they're really seeing in their mind are these wonderful photographs taken by FSA photographers, including Russell Lee.
Okay, so let's talk about Pinetown now. When you decided that you were going to do this project, Pinetown Revisited, It's 70 years later, and I would imagine you needed to have sort of a co-producer, somebody on the ground that acted kind of as a fixer for you.
Yes, great. Well put. And when I did my research about Pinetown, I Googled Pinetown, and one of the first things that came up in the search was the Pioneer Cafe, Pioneer Cafe. So I thought, the name alone right off the bat, I said, oh, this is going to be good. So I called the Pioneer Cafe, and this lovely woman answered the phone, Kathy Knapp. She said to me, we have photographers who come through here once in a while, and they mention or they're familiar with Russell Lee, but none of them has proposed to do what you're proposing to do, which in essence was something in depth about what the town is like now and interview people. And if there are people who have relatives who knew Russell Lee or were photographed by Russell Lee, I would love to meet them and photograph them, et cetera. So Kathy and I bonded instantly. And it being such a small town, after a while, I felt I pretty much had met everybody and photographed most of them.
And how many people live there?
The core population is about 70 people. There's a post office that serves a wider area that includes about 125 people total.
Wow. Are the two pie cafes the big draw to Pinetown?
Yes, I would say so, because US 60, it's a pretty well-traveled route. There's a very famous art installation about 20 or so miles west of Pinetown called the Lightning Field, which was created by this artist, Walter DeMara. And so a lot of art tourists will drive through Pinetown, and typically they'll stop for pie. And also, Kathy's Cafe, the Pioneer Cafe, it's been written up in a lot of guidebooks to New Mexico. She's been featured on CBS Sunday Morning. So even though the cafe is in the middle of nowhere, the cafe's reputation is known far and wide.
There is another cafe there with pie in the name.
Mm-hmm. The Good Pie.
Yes. The Good Pie. So tell us who runs that place.
That place, up until recently, was run by a gentleman named Michael Rawl, and he takes credit for inventing New Mexico apple pie. And for your listeners who are unfamiliar with that, it is a Southwest variation on the American classic. It's envision apple pie that also includes green chili and pinion nuts, pine nuts. And it's quite tasty.
It sounds wonderful.
And the crust on top has the Zia symbol, if you're familiar with the New Mexico flag. It's a circle with these stripes going in each of the cardinal directions. And Michael likes to put the Zia in crust on top of the typical crust.
Tell me what a couple of your favorite pies that Kathy makes at the Pioneer Cafe are.
At the Pioneer Cafe, they have something, they have an expression, a piegasm. And this is when people eat the pie and the look on their faces takes on this erotic, ecstatic feeling that is just beyond words. And this red chili chocolate chess, it's just beyond words because you get the creaminess of the chocolate and the butter or whatever else is going on in there. And then the chili, it's just enough. It's like a hint. It's like a whiff of the chili. It's not going to blow the roof off. You know what I mean? It's just subtle. And then she has some almonds on top just to give you some crunchy texture. And again, not a lot, just enough. And you put all that in your mouth, and it is a piegasm.
Thank you so much, Arthur.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was Arthur Drucker. His book is Pie Town Revisited. You know, Kathy Knapp from Pioneer Cafe in Pie Town actually competed in the Good Food Pie Contest a few years ago. Pretty amazing, right? She's also featured in the short film Pie Fidelity, which chronicles the pie road trip former pie contest champion Nicole Rucker took with friends. Here's a clip of Kathy from the movie.
My family was on vacation, and we came for pie, and there was none. And so when we walked up the stairs and the sign said, used to be pie in Pie Town, ain't no more for sale. My mother said words I'd never heard her say. She's like, that's wrong. That is so wrong. And for 700 and some miles back to Dallas, I heard how many kinds of pies my mother would make if this was her pie shop. And we bought it in the summer, and my mother started baking. We opened on Veterans Day, November 11th, 1995.
Kathy isn't the only contestant to enter from afar. We've had a few long-distance entries in the past. One time, we had a baker from Arizona enter 5 categories. No distance is too far. No amount of experience is too little. Enter with a friend or come solo. You'll make new friends there, I promise. Again, the pie contest is October 4th at the Fowler Museum at UCLA. But the deadline to enter is Sunday, September 27th at 11:55. So don't procrastinate. Go to kcrw.com/pie to enter in 1, 2, or all 7 categories. The PieCast was produced by Jillian Ferguson with production assistance from Ray Guarna. I'm Evan Kleinman. Happy baking, everybody.